Hello and welcome to the EMS On Air podcast. The mission of this podcast is to keep healthcare providers safe, informed, and prepared. Today is January 28, 2021. This episode was recorded on January 25th, 2021. I'm Jeff Lassers and I'll be your host. In episode 11 and 13 of this season, I sat down with Dr. Steve McGraw and Dr. Russell Faust to discuss the safety profile of the upcoming COVID-19 vaccinations, as well as answer common questions from the EMS and hospital communities. Since then, thousands and thousands of people continue to be vaccinated every day. Today, Steve and Russ are back to break down the latest info about the COVID-19 vaccinations with a nice clean update. As always, everything you hear during this episode is based in the latest scientific data and literature. Together, Dr. Steve McGraw and Dr. Russell Faust have been a major part of EMS's understanding and response throughout the entire COVID-19 pandemic. Even though we are located in Southeast Michigan and we mention our home state a lot, today's content applies to EMS on the national and even the global scale. Dr. Steve McGraw is an ED physician at Ascension Providence Hospitals in both Southfield and Novi, Michigan. Doc is also the current Oakland County Medical Control Authority EMS Medical Director, which provides oversight to 50 EMS agencies. Steve also has a degree in microbiology with emphasis in cellular and molecular biology, so he's no slouch when it comes to understanding viruses and vaccines. Dr. Russell Faust is the medical director of Oakland County Health. Before medical school, Dr. Faust earned his PhD in cellular molecular biology. After medical school, he trained as a trauma surgeon, and then he did a fellowship in pediatric head and neck surgery. My friend Russ has over 30 years in academic medicine, and he also ran NIH-funded labs to do applied translational cellular molecular biology. Oh yeah, and his first job in the medical field was as an EMT in the state of New York. My guy Russ isn't just a super cool smart doc. He is also fundamentally rooted in EMS. Russ and Steve are both considered experts in their respective fields, and they're here again to give us an update about the COVID-19 vaccinations, as well as answer recent questions from the EMS and hospital communities. Most importantly, all of their answers are based in the latest scientific data and literature that clearly demonstrates the safety of the current COVID-19 vaccinations that are currently available. The list of questions discussed today are in the episode description. Even though the fellas do a great job of answering every question they could think of, I'm sure there are more good ones out there, so please keep emailing your questions, comments, feedback, and episode ideas to the EMS On Air podcast team by email at qi@ocmca.org. Also, check out our website, emsonair.com, for the latest information, podcast episodes, and other details. Follow us on Instagram at emsonair. And please, whatever podcast platform you use, subscribe to our podcast and leave us a rating and a review. It really does help us to grow this project. I really can't tell you guys this enough. Please, please, please leave us a rating and a review and help us get noticed on a much larger scale. Remember, the mission of the EMS On Air podcast is to keep healthcare providers safe, informed, and prepared. Increasing our ratings and reviews gets us noticed by more listeners and more sponsors, which will lead to increasing our reach, resources, experts, and abilities. Bottom line, ratings and reviews are vital to our growth, and your contribution will give us what we need to serve those that serve our communities. The only cost to you is a few minutes, giving us a rating and a review on whatever podcast platform you use. We'd really appreciate it. Thank you, and enjoy the episode. So let's get right after it. Dr. Faust, can you give us a status of the COVID-19 update as of today or yesterday, whatever's better for you?
Well, let's talk about vaccine, because that's what everybody wants to hear about. I really don't want to focus on the numbers of infected and fatalities. Let's focus on the positive. Let's look ahead. Let's look forward. And that's all about vaccine, wearing a mask, distancing, and putting an end to the pandemic. So Oakland County Health has vaccinated somewhere around just shy of 15,000 in 5 or 6 weeks. Now, I just want to say we had the capacity to vaccinate more than 15,000 on a weekly basis. It all just takes receiving more vaccine. Now, I know everybody's frustrated. The CDC is frustrated. The state at MDHHS are frustrated. We're frustrated in local health. And, you know, the general population is frustrated that we just don't have enough vaccine. Try to look at it from the perspective of these companies producing vaccine. You know, they're not just producing for Oakland County or even Michigan or even the United States. They are producing vaccine for the entire planet right now, and they're doing the very best they can. I guarantee you every one of these companies is working 24/7 and working around the clock and many shifts, and they have everybody on this to produce as much vaccine safely and rapidly as possible. So yeah, everybody's frustrated, but there's more on the way. So we've gotten more, kind of gradually had more sent to us, and we don't care what kind it is. Frankly, if it has an EUA, we'll take it and stick it in somebody's arm. So that's where we are right now.
Fantastic. So is there any changes in return to work rules for any of this with vaccines? Does this change anything logistically? I guess, is that even a good question?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, let's broaden that out and talk about whether it changes not only return to work issues, but whether it changes whether you can wear a mask or what happens if you are fully vaccinated and you get exposed to somebody with COVID-19. Right now, it doesn't change anything. That is, even if you've been fully vaccinated, two doses of Moderna or Pfizer, and you're exposed, you still need to be quarantined, the full extent of quarantine. It still has the same return to work rules. It still has the same wearing the mask and distancing kind of prevention rules, mitigation practices. We need to do everything we can to put an end to this pandemic. And because there are a few unknowns with regard to, for example, whether you've been fully vaccinated, can you be a, quote, virus carrier and transmit it to somebody else? We just don't know the answer to these questions. So until we do, and that might take a year, but until we know the answers, we need to put an end to the pandemic. And that means same rules apply. Nothing has changed. Wear a mask, distance, quarantine if you've been exposed, and we can put an end to this. Over time, CDC is collecting data. We'll have updates. There are likely to be modifications to these rules. But right now, we need to do everything we can to put an end to this, especially until everybody gets vaccinated.
You know, Russ, I'm really glad you said that. Because, you know, Dr. Faust, our associates, very, very many of them who have been vaccinated, both physician medical staff and our associates and our nursing colleagues, we all line up every morning, 6 feet apart, get our temperature taken as we come in the hospital. We have to wear a special sticker day to day, and an application on our phone indicates that our temperature was checked, we were screened for all symptoms, and we don't have them and we're safe to work. Without doing that, we're not allowed into the patient care area. Now you could say, well, wait a minute, hasn't almost the entire medical staff and most of the associates been vaccinated? That's true. But it doesn't change the fact that people who come to us are vulnerable. And if we work unwittingly and are also a carrier, despite our vaccine, how horrible would that be? We could take someone who comes to us with a heart attack and take care of their heart attack while also giving them COVID-19. Since we don't know that that is true, that we can't be a carrier, we simply abide by the same rules, exactly as you said, the same rules, the same screening, the same temperature checks every day like we did 6 months ago. And I support that.
With maintaining all of these procedures, essentially what I think I'm understanding here is that the spread of the infection has a certain trajectory. We're going to administer the intervention, the vaccine within the general public. We're going to change that trajectory. But the trajectory changes more dramatically and effectively if everybody maintains their social distancing and facial coverings so that we not only stop its ability through vaccines, but also its ability to spread, thus getting faster to no more masks and general opening of society again. Would that be safe to say?
Yes, Jeff.
Here's a question. I've had my vaccine. Do I have antibodies after I've completed both vaccines?
Well, the answer is, you know, if you do an appropriate serologic testing, which is both expensive and somewhat difficult to obtain, you would certainly have detectable antibodies after you've been vaccinated. That is absolutely true. That's why we get the vaccinations in the first place. I want to caution people because even today, if you check on the internet, there are ways to obtain these very sketchy lateral flow sort of pseudo pregnancy test type kits. They're retailing for about $28 on the internet this morning. Those are not scientific. They are not valuable pieces of medical information, and I highly recommend people do not waste their money on them. So yes, you will have antibodies once you're vaccinated, but don't try to test it with a completely irresponsible and untested device. You're much better off just being comforted by the knowledge that you are highly likely to be now immune and protecting yourself from getting sick, even while we don't know whether or not you could carry it to make somebody else sick. It should give you some comfort that you yourself are wildly unlikely to need to be hospitalized after you've been vaccinated.
No, thank you for that, Dr. McGraw. I want to reemphasize that point. Do not waste your money on these so-called rapid antibody tests. They're absolute garbage.
Well, thank you for that. Now, after I've had my vaccines, will I have a positive COVID test? How is that going to affect all the different various tests that are out there?
So you don't have a positive test. Let's talk about the tests. There's the test for virus, the presence of virus, and those come in two types. There's antigen test that looks for proteins of the virus, and there's the molecular test that looks for the viral RNA. So those are antigen, rapid, or otherwise, and PCR, polymerase chain reaction, the gold standard molecular test. Neither one of those is going to be positive after you're vaccinated. So let's talk about both of those tests. The first is looking for you shedding virus, and it's looking for viral proteins in the shed virus. Whether it's alive or dead, it's looking for those viral proteins being shed. The fact is, you're being inoculated, you're being vaccinated with mRNA that gets in your cells, and as that's being used as the code to translate protein, specifically spike protein, you're thinking, oh, wait, I'm getting a vaccine that's spike protein. Won't that be detected by the antigen test? The answer is no, because it's focal and you're deltoid, and your immune system is attacking that, shredding it, and none of it is actually shed. So that's the first thing. And that mRNA that you're being vaccinated with is being chewed up very rapidly, even more rapidly than the protein. I mean, the beauty of mRNA for a vaccine, it's not incorporated into your DNA, and it is attacked very rapidly by RNases. And the reason is every organism on the planet has evolved RNases in response to RNA viruses, whether those are bacteria, all the way up to humans. We have RNases everywhere, even intracellularly. And I don't want to get too much of the molecular cell bio geek that I am, but you know, when this stuff is taken up into the cells to translate protein off that message, part of the magic and proprietary elixir is the lipid nanoparticle coating of these things. And, you know, the companies are very secretive about this because this dictates how that lipid nanoparticle containing the mRNA vaccine is managed inside the cell. And it really determines the success of whether it stays around even long enough to be translated into protein. And that's actually their biggest challenge, is to get it to stay around long enough.
Russ, you make a great point. I think for certain, to give people comfort, that negative, if you will, the film negative or the messenger RNA that's injected inside those tiny little nanocapsules, it's eliminated by your body after it does its beauty, creating the spike proteins that your immune system learns to recognize in the future. The RNases break that down in hours, not days. This stuff is not around, and that's why it doesn't affect you long term. If you ask most people, they have a little sore arm or they have some symptoms, but they're relatively short-lived because these things are chewed up and disposed of, remanufactured into things your body handles waste products with all the time in literally a matter of hours.
And let me just say, that sore arm, maybe red and swelling, that's from your immune's response to the spike protein that was translated and expressed by those cells. And again, that's reassuring to me because it tells me that my immune system is getting ready. It's getting riled up. It's ticked off. It's seeing something it hasn't seen before. It's clearly a foreign invader. And they did a great job selecting the spike protein.
They did. And if we want to really go back to the nature of how the vaccine has to work, it has to be effective in preventing people that encounter the virus in the wild to be able to have an immune system prepared and capable of responding to it before the virus can do the damage that we've seen it wrought so often in our community. And that's why this has got an over 90% effectiveness. This is really an outstanding scientific achievement.
And so, Jeff, to answer your question, you will not have a positive test after being vaccinated.
All right. Well, all that stuff in the middle did help, but the very end there, I think, is the good one for us there. So no, you won't have a positive test after receiving your vaccine.
This quick commercial break is brought to you by American CME. American CME is an online continuing education learning platform designed for EMS providers by EMS providers. Their mission is simple: create and host high-quality video-based EMS CE content with the aim of improving the quality of EMS care while drastically reducing or eliminating the cost associated with EMS training. American CME courses focus on the most current topics in science related to the EMS industry and are available in a format that makes them convenient to access and complete. The EMS On Air podcast will continue to release more episodes on AmericanCME.com. This means that EMS providers can earn EMS continuing education credits by completing an entire podcast episode, a brief post-course quiz, and a survey. To do this, visit AmericanCME.com. Click on the courses link, then click on free courses. Scroll through the courses list and look for the courses with the EMS On Air podcast logo. As of today, January 28, 2021, episodes 11 and 13 are both launched on AmericanCME.com. Both of these episodes provide the details, science, and related information about the COVID-19 vaccines. So get on over to American CME and get you some credits. Think about it. Cruising to work, kicking back, engaged in an EMS On Air podcast episode, increasing your knowledge and awareness of the COVID-19 vaccines and earning CEs? Come on, does it get better than that when it comes to EMS education? Did I mention you can access all of American CME's content for free? Yeah, free. And now back to the show.
All right, guys. So this new thing I keep hearing about is the word variant. I think that's my new 2021 buzzword. So what is up with all these COVID variants? And what is a variant? Can you start there?
Good question, Jeff. And part of it, Dr. Faust will fill us in too, but variant is not a different strain. A strain of a virus is immunologically distinct from another strain. This is, and same with bacteria. This is different. This is the same virus with some of the same capabilities. It's just got some different mutated sequences of its genetic code. It still functions like COVID. It'll still infect you. It may infect you more likely or less likely, but a variant really reflects the fact that it's the same strain or the same type of virus with some mutated changes that might change what we call the phenotype, its ability to act in nature or act in your body. And I'm really glad that Dr. Faust will kind of fill us in because these are not a surprise.
Dr. Faust, can you follow up to that?
So SARS-CoV-2, responsible for COVID-19 infections, is an RNA virus. And RNA viruses are notorious for a rapid mutation rate. As they go from person to person, as they are dividing in you in an infected person, every replication results in a mutation.
Yeah, like a misspelling, like a substituting, yeah. You know, one yeah. base pair for another.
So all it means is that the replicases that the virus uses in your body and that it codes for replicases to crank out more copies of itself once it's inside your cells, they are not very high fidelity. And so as they reel off copies, they're pretty loose about it and they make occasional mistakes. And just to give you a sense of this, just to maybe have people talk about a virus that people can relate to, is the standard influenza virus that's going around constantly. So one of the reasons that we are offered an annual update on the influenza vaccine, the flu shot, is that influenza is also an RNA virus. It mutates so rapidly that in the span of a year, there will be thousands of variants, not new strains, but as Dr. McGraw says, variants, or another word is clade, C-L-A-D-E. But because of that, every year the CDC and experts around the world select the four most dangerous appearing strains, and they create a vaccine on that basis. Because SARS-CoV-2, responsible for the COVID-19 infection, is also an RNA virus, it has a fairly high mutation rate. So there are variants. Some of those variants actually result in an inability of that particular viral strain to infect people, and it just disappears. And so analogous to that would be what we expected to occur, a global pandemic occurring from SARS or MERS some time ago, years ago, maybe a decade ago. Those never really materialized. That is, those were also RNA viruses, and they essentially ended up having mutations that resulted in them disappearing from the population. It didn't happen because of vaccination, even though these companies were, in fact, working on mRNA vaccines at the time, and we should return to that point. It didn't happen because of so-called herd immunity or community immunity. It happened because of this, what we're seeing now. It happened because of mutations and variant virus strains. So right now, there have been four or five clinically significant variants have popped up to date. Obviously, there have been more than that, but they haven't been really clinically significant. And by that, I mean, we notice them once they take over and replace the former ubiquitous virus around the planet. So, for example, if one of these mutations results in, say, a spike protein that's a little bit better sticking, a little bit better adhering to the lining of someone's nose, it's going to be more readily transfected. And that's what we've been seeing. That's what we see with the UK variant. That's what we see with the Brazil variant. What we see with the South African variant is these are a little bit better at being transmitted. They're more infectious. They don't seem to be necessarily any more dangerous. That is, they don't result in a more severe infection, although we can certainly expect that to occur at some point. There will be some kind of mutation that results in more severe clinical case, but that hasn't occurred so far that we know. Now, let's talk about the concern about variants. I just mentioned the first. The UK variant B117 is a little bit more highly infectious. It's better at being transmitted person to person. What does that mean for us? What does that mean for you? It means you need to continue wearing a mask, need to continue distancing. All of the things that we know help prevent the spread of these viruses are even more important now. This is not the time to become complacent. This is the time to be vigilant. This is incredibly important now that we have variants that are more easily transmitted. They're more infectious. The other concern is that, for example, the South African variant appears to have mutations in the spike protein. And some of those mutations are no longer recognized by people who are vaccinated against these mRNA vaccines. So, say you have the spike protein, you have several hundred antigenic sites on it. There are 13 mutations in the spike protein, for example, and you're going to lose some of those. What we have lost is recognition by our monoclonal antibody treatment regimens. That is, we have, I believe, three that are clinically authorized to be used, and those three monoclonals were against antigens on the spike protein, which have had changes in their antigenicity. They've had replacements of amino acids due to mutations where the monoclonal antibodies just doesn't recognize that spike protein of the South African variant anymore. So this is going to become the concern. The good news is people who have been vaccinated still have a high level of immune response to the South African variant. But again, I have to emphasize, it means that everybody needs to wear a mask, whether you've been vaccinated or not. Everybody needs to maintain distance, whether you've been vaccinated or not. We need to be super vigilant about these mitigation practices. We need to continue these because the fact is, these mutations could easily result in SARS-CoV-2 just sort of petering out like SARS and MERS did, or they could, in fact, go in the opposite direction. It's completely random what these mutations do to the amino acid sequence and what happens in the clinical response. One of these things could possibly become more deadly or become completely resistant to people who are vaccinated. So no matter what, we need to continue masks and distancing. Dr. McGraw, you want to add?
Well, no, you really said it so well, Dr. Faust. My greatest emphasis is exactly what you said. People need to continue to double down on wearing masks in public, doing the social distancing we know, because that's going to give us the space, if you will, for our vaccinated humans to become less able to transmit it from one to another. That's how this dies out. It doesn't die out just because we get vaccinated. The vaccinations are integral to the whole response, but they're not sufficient on their own. If we continue to wear masks, socially distant, whether we have variants or not, as long as our immune responses are still effective, and they should be, then we'll have achieved what we want. But you can't do one without the other. Masks alone will not get us where we want to be by the end of this year. Vaccines alone will not get us to where we want to be by the end of this year. It's working together, both those endeavors. And I'm really confident. I will tell you, in my own emergency departments in Southeast Michigan, I'm seeing a steady but very manageable number of people coming in each day. And what I will tell you is I'm hopeful that that number will even continue to go down more. But it reflects, despite the fact that we had Christmas, despite the fact that we are indoors a lot for the winter, I think by and large, people are being responsible. The number that are being irresponsible is becoming less and less common and less accepted. We now have a federal mandate to make sure we're wearing masks anytime we're on federal property or traveling via any mode between states, bus, train, airplane, so that it comes with the full weight and power of a mandate from the federal government. That's not because it doesn't work. That's because it does work. And as long as we continue to do that and make that the norm and stop arguing about it and rather consider our masks as a way of protecting our fellow citizens, the effect of the vaccines is going to be very dramatic and we'll get there. We all want to get to the same place. I don't doubt that for a second. We just have to consider it a necessary part of our lives for a little bit longer.
I will say variants are here. U of M just shut down their athletic department for 2 weeks because the UK B117 variant is outbreak among their athletes. It's here. And again, there's nothing special to do. Masks, distancing, wash your hands.
So in summary, these variants don't necessarily produce a more deadly situation. They just produce a change in conditions. And if we allow those changing conditions to occur without intervention, such as masks, social distancing, and vaccines, we only produce a problem lying in wait that could only get much worse than we've ever experienced.
No, Jeff, they're really up against it in the UK right now because of the speed with which this is transmitted. To get kind of wonky on it, the R naught, that factor of how many people one infected person will infect, it doesn't mean their fatality rate per case is necessarily higher, or it might be, but we'll know in the future. But what is true is if more people are getting it to more people at a rapid rate, the number of people that get severely sick and ultimately some of them die will increase. So again, it goes right back to the very prevention that we know works. And it works in this variant too. Because it is more easily transmissible, it's even more important to be socially cognizant of how far we are, to wear masks, to wash our hands, and to self-isolate when we've been exposed. Because it is more easily transmitted, that by its very virtue of that, it compels us to then be more careful. It was already plenty infectious, by the way. I didn't need it to get any better, but the fact that this is more easily transmitted person to person, for whatever reason, this change in the spike protein are the biggest culprit, I think. Regardless, we know how to fix it, and we know how to protect ourselves and those we care about.
That's all for the show today, everyone. Thank you for listening. Thank you to Russ and Steve for coming on again and spreading your knowledge. Your time and participation is always appreciated and never wasted. Again, even though the fellas did a great job of answering every question they could think of, I'm sure there's more good ones out there. So please keep emailing your questions, comments, feedback, and episode ideas to the EMS On Air podcast team at qi@ocmca.org. Also, check out our updated website, emsonair.com, for the latest information, podcast episodes, and other details. Follow us on Instagram at emsonair. And please, whatever podcast platform you use, subscribe to the podcast and leave us a rating and a review because it really helps us to grow this podcast. Thank you for listening to the EMS On Air podcast. Stay safe and have a great day.